A. Hyatt Mayer had a distinguished career as an art historian, author, and curator of prints at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. In his final years, he was also an active member of the Archives of American Art Advisory Committee, whose twice-yearly deliberations were enlivened by his particular blend of enthusiasm and wit. In this excerpt from an interview conducted by Paul Cummings in 1969, Mayer recalls how he stumbled into his job at the Metropolitan, and he describes working with print curator William Ivins and the early development of the collection.
When I wanted to get married, of course, it was the draggy depths of the Depression. So I hawked myself around to all the people I knew at the universities, the Eastern Seaboard, who would just have none of me. That was just, throw that man out, it breaks my heart. And finally, just completely by accident, just tumbled into the print department, which I was in. Then Ivins had the courage to hire me. And believe me, it took courage, because I had no qualifications whatsoever, beyond being able to read the languages. And that was his reason, that I could inform myself, I could teach myself.
I've been able to find out very, very little about
him. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
So, well, you know, quite curious about how he worked, what kind of personality he was.
Well, he was a very tall, slatternly kind of man. He sort of, he didn't quite shamble like the two halves of two camels the way Steichen does, but he walked a little like that. And he looked like a sort of Raquel Goethe. Rather consciously sloppy. He had the Harvard hat, all in holes and tatters, but that wasn't because it was an old hat, that was style. It was quite deliberate. He was more an owl than a lark, and he'd work late at night, as lawyers do, and would come into the museum at 11 o'clock in the morning, but then stay late sometimes. As a lawyer, he had an intemperate way of arguing. And it was always the argumentum ad hominem.
Somebody did mention that he was withdrawing sometimes when he was arguing.
He had a terrible temper. Absolutely. Ungovernable. And if I hadn't had school bills and pediatricians and diapers to pay for, I would not have lasted out, and it would have been a great mistake to have left. But I would have flounced out, certainly, if I had been a bachelor. No question about that. But somehow, to pay for a family gives one a stomach for crow.
I'm curious about the early collections or groups of prints that came into the department, because there was the first Harry Dick collection. Were there other ones like that?
Yes.
You know,
there were a good many. A charming little tiny old lady came in once called Georgiana Sargent. And she had a Durer woodcut of Samson and the Lion, which is one of the woodcuts he made around 1500, fairly early ones. This is part of her father's collection. Her father collected biblical subjects. And she said, this is so fresh and new. Of course, I'm sure it's a facsimile, but you might want it, perhaps. And I just looked at it very, very closely indeed. So, in my mind, it's not a facsimile. It's just simply about the best impression that survived from this block. She was delighted at that and gave her whole father's collection. Then Junius Morgan, who was the nephew of J.P. Morgan, I think he was the nephew, he was very much interested in Durer. And he sat in Paris for some 30 years collecting Durer's prints and other things too. He would swap out things when he got better impressions, so he was always bettering the impressions that he had. Finally, he sold the copper plates to the museum and gave woodcuts, which is a wonderful thing. That was about in the early 20s. So that gave us the best Durer collection in the country, one of the best Durer collections anyway, as a matter of fact. It's a wonderful lot. Perhaps one of the most remarkable gifts came from Felix Warburg, who lived here where the Jewish Museum is now. And in the billiard room there, which is the corner room on the ground floor, On the billiard table, they kept the large portfolios of books, prints. And and I know that Gerald Warburg told me that he and his brothers were very annoyed by this collection, because whenever they wanted to shoot pool, they had to take off these great big heavy volumes. And when he died, he bequeathed his collection to Mrs. Warburg for her lifetime. Mm-hmm. At her death, the children were to take what they wanted out of it, mm-hmm. and the remainder might come to the Metropolitan. Well, the family got together and said they didn't want that at all. That they would like the Metropolitan to choose immediately, this is 1941, mm-hmm. choose immediately what it either lacked altogether mm-hmm. or had in worse impressions. Mm-hmm. Very good proviso, you see. Mm-hmm. In other words, we were not to take duplicates, we'd only swap.
Right.
Absolutely correct. So, the whole batch of us, I haven't decided, it's a big collection, several hundred, well, 300-400 things, mm-hmm. worked very hard on this and very scrupulously observed these mm-hmm. requirements, or requests rather. And in came some of the most wonderful Rembrandts you ever saw. Oh my God, things you never get nowadays again. Never. And wonderful early German things, mm-hmm. which had belonged to Junius Morgan, because mm-hmm. Warburg had bought the early Germans from Junius Morgan. And all sorts of things. It was one of the very, very great gifts. Then Mrs. Havemeyer's collection, which came in 1929, I think it was, also contained some wonderful things. It contained beautiful impressions of the color etchings by her friend Mary Cassatt, mm-hmm. as well as marvelous Rembrandts and some Durers.
So quite a large Rembrandt.
Yes. Yes. Ivins was extremely sensible there. He never bought what people collected, because he knew that would be dropped to the poor man's hand someday. Mm-hmm. And he was right. And that was very intelligent of him, you know. Very. He never bought whistlers, mm-hmm. because they would come in. And they did.